Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Are you working on your NCAA brackets? Yes, it may be May outside with 70-degree temperatures, but it's March on the calendar, and the madness of the college basketball tournament gets started this week. Of course, critics, including civil rights historian Taylor Branch and New York Times columnist Joe Nocera, would probably say the word madness belongs to the NCAA and the enormous sums of money being made by colleges while the athlete scholarships barely cover their expenses. So joining me for a look at college athletics in the United States today before the tournament begins and we all get caught up in the games is USA Today sports reporter Steve Weiberg. Welcome to WNYC. Hello.
How are you doing, Brian?
Good, thank you. March Madness. How much money does that represent for the NCAA and the schools?
Well, they are in the second year of a brand new contract with CBS and Turner Sports, and it is the means of revenue that supports basically the entire NCAA structure. Money's filtered down to all of the schools. I mean, we're talking about the millions upon millions of dollars, over the length of the contract. It is significant.
And then you add in football money, and you can see how much collegiate sports is distorted by it. Nobody's paying that much money to watch fencing or swimming or hockey even, whatever. So it all gets skewed toward basketball and football.
Well, and this is the correct, and this is the best kind of reality TV. It's the programming that people do not DVR, and that's what makes the property so valuable. And the money just continues to spiral, and it's spiraling everywhere. And you see it in coaches' contracts. You see it in money that's being put into facilities, into new stadiums and locker rooms and everything. And the debate is, okay, how about the guys who are doing all the sweating on the field and on the playing court?
Listeners, we can take some calls on this, especially if you played college sports. Maybe you're a college athlete's parents. Do you agree with the calls to compensate players or change the money flow in other ways regarding NCAA college sports? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. There's so much criticism of the current system, as you well know, as most of our listeners know. Who's happy with the current system?
Well, I think the NCAA is reasonably happy with it. There are proposals now to get a little more money into the hands of the players, up to $2,000 beyond their scholarships. Certainly the NCAA's biggest critics feel that that's just a drop in the bucket. They see that as a start, but not as a finish, not as a fair compensation for what these athletes are actually earning for their institutions. But, the NCAA is determined to try to keep what it says is an amateur aspect to this. I don't know how much virtue big-time college sports has left, but it still has at least an amateur veneer to it, and the NCAA is insistent upon maintaining that. Its president, Mark Emmert, is absolutely insistent that players will not just be outright paid, and the stipend, this up to a $2,000 stipend, is its way of trying to move the needle a little bit. I think, by and large, I suppose schools are okay with this, even though, they would like even more money. There are fewer than half a dozen at the highest level that are operating in the black overall athletics programs. It's a struggle for them, but facilities costs are going up. Again, coaches' salaries are going up, and if we want to talk about the people who are happy with this, it has to be coaches as well, because they're in the free market, and the free market right now is dictating that their compensation go higher and higher.
Let's take a call. Justin in Mount Laurel, you're on WNYC. Hi, Justin.
how you doing, Brian? I just want to say that I call in. I listen all the time, so thanks for.
I'm really glad. Thanks for piping up. Hi.
Yeah, I just want to say that I think that college players should be paid, not necessarily an insane amount of money, but coaches are getting paid a lot of money, and they're getting a lot of perks. Some coaches get free cars, free houses, so on and so forth. And a lot of college players, you know, don't necessarily get the same benefits. And not every college player is a scholarship player. Not only that, but college players, for instance, there was a scandal in NFL that, not in NFL, NCAA football, Ohio State, a player exchanged some of his memorabilia for a tattoo. Now, a regular college student can do that. If they have something of value they want to exchange, they can do that. But a football player can't do that. You know, it's kind of unfair. So they should either the rules should be a little bit more relaxed so they can at least kind of trade off their own name, which mm-hmm. is their own stuff, or they should be getting paid.
That's such a small thing, the tattoo. How far would you like to see it go for them to get compensation? Is it to be able to sell their Nike commercials or whatever for the things that they wear, or how far would you like to see them go?
Well, I think Nike commercials, that may be too much, but I feel as though, and I think that's where the rules come in. So you can have rules that say, you know, you can't necessarily do an endorsement per se. But and because I understand the danger is, you know, you don't want to start doing things where there's a recent controversy for point shaving. You don't want to start trading favors for stuff that might affect things going on in the field.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, if nobody's putting money in these kids' pockets, and it's their stuff, you know, it's their jersey or it's their signed football, they should be able to, you know, put it on eBay. I mean, as a regular college uh-huh. student, I can put something on eBay right now, and nobody can tell me otherwise. And if my thing is that all the students are, quote-unquote, amateurs, but everybody else is a professional. The coaches are professional coaches. They get paid like professional coaches, you know, the training staff, so on and so forth. So
it's right.
kind of
only
the, to kind of stymie these
the players
kids,
themselves are locked out. Justin, thank you so much. Please call us again. So this brings us, Steve, and my guest is Steve Weberg, USA Today sports reporter, as we talk about how student-athletes are not compensated before we head into March Madness and everybody gets all involved in watching the games. This brings us to the whole topic of what are the realistic solutions to this. I mentioned Taylor Branch's big article in The Atlantic last fall where he looked at the history of the NCAA and how the term student-athlete came into being and ends up concluding that the only way out is to pay the players who are risking their necks, literally in the case of football. Joe Nocera, the New York Times columnist, came up with his plan for how to do that. Sports Illustrated came out for boosters to be able to pay the players. These are not new ideas, but something in these directions do seem to be gathering steam. Is the NCAA listening? Is one more realistic for debate than another?
Well, they may be gathering steam outside the NCAA, but not within the NCAA. There are both principal and practical concerns about paying players. And let's start with just on principle, because that is where the NCAA really is wanting to hold the line. Again, I'm not going to pretend that there's a ton of virtue left in major college athletics, primarily the two revenue-producing sports of football and men's basketball. We've talked about the money already. We've certainly seen a string of very high-profile scandals in just the past couple of years. It is a business. But it is still an athletics enterprise that is tied ostensibly to higher education. And to just throw the door open to just say, okay, you know, we recognize that these guys are quasi-professionals, and so we're going to pay them that way, is just not a line that the NCAA wants to cross. They do want, again, that at least veneer of amateurism, players getting scholarships, maybe getting a little bit more money to cover the expense of going to school mm-hmm. that scholarships don't cover.
That's these $2,000 a year stipends, which are relatively new.
Right. That would be for something like, you know, travel back and forth from home a couple of times a year, laundry money, various incidental expenses, those kinds of things.
And aren't the scholarships only for 1 year, even at that? So if a player gets injured in his freshman year and he comes from a poor family, there's no guarantee that he's even going to be able to come out of the experience with a college education, or if his play isn't up to snuff and they decide to cut him?
That indeed was the case up until just recently. The NCAA, at the same time that it was drawing up the $2,000 stipend, drew up a proposal to allow schools to extend multi-year scholarships, not just single-year scholarships. Mm-hmm. And that indeed passed, not without some rough waters. It was passed by the NCAA board. A number of schools objected. It wound up going to a vote of the entire Division I membership, you know, more than 350 schools and conferences. It survived by two votes, but it did survive. So there are at least multi-year scholarships. Players feel like, I think, they have a little bit more security than what they once did. So the attention is now on the $2,000 stipend. It also has had some objections. It's currently being tweaked. They might just make it need-based, not just up to $2,000 for everybody across the board, but for players who have the kinds of economic family backgrounds that require or that call for needing a little bit more money beyond their scholarships. So they're trying to work through that. But, you know, the NCAA can do that as a scholarship and a cost of attendance and still feel that it's tied to higher education. But just outright putting players on salary, essentially making them professionals, is not something they want to do. And then as a practical matter, it's certainly for both the NCAA and the member schools, putting these guys on scholarships opens all kinds of just legal tax concerns, workman's compensation, and so forth. So, you know, there, as you say, there might be some gathering steam for paying players, but it's not within the organization that's going to be making that call.
And I think Dan in South Orange wants to push back on this sympathy toward the idea of paying college athletes. Dan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hey, Brian, it's Ben.
Ben, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, I played college soccer. I know it's soccer. It's a little different animal. But I lived with all the baseball, football, basketball players. We had a pretty cushy life, and everybody was getting, you know, a full scholarship, getting a free education, and you know, it's not that I'm not sensitive to the fact that a lot of these kids are coming from lower income, but are we losing sight that they're also going to, you know, some very expensive schools and they're getting that education, which is quite expensive to the non-student athlete? I don't understand why that compensation is not being considered.
Dan, thank you. And I'm going to go for a possible answer to that question to another caller, Jocelyn in New Rochelle. Hi, Jocelyn. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And you played college tennis, I understand, right?
I did.
And you think the players should get paid?
I think that players should receive more compensation than they currently do, particularly players whose jerseys are being sold in student stores and in stores surrounding the campus. Because certain jersey numbers, even though they don't have the player's name on them, they're directly associated to that player and that player's performance. So if someone has a great game, that jersey sale is going to go through the roof, and the player is completely cut out of any profit from that.
So what do you say to the previous caller? Did you hear him?
I did hear that. And to that I have to say, when you are doing college athletics, especially on the Division I level, you have a second full-time job, and you don't have time to join clubs or to get involved in research going on campus or to get the full benefit of what's going on at your university. So, yes, you get to attend class and have your tuition paid for and your meals covered, but you're not getting that unique experience that you could get if you had the extra, you know, 25 to 40 hours to really spend getting to see what is on campus and what the opportunities are to network and really build a strong college experience.
How did you see your tennis when you were in college? Did you see it as a full-time job in addition to your studies as you described it? Did you see it as a means to a possible career as a pro? I don't know how serious you were. Did you see it as a means to a funded college education? What was your own understanding of your own relationship to how much time you were spending at tennis?
So I'm actually kind of a unique case. I was a walk-on on my team, even though I was in the starting lineup. But we were number one for most of the season my sophomore year, and it was definitely a full-time job, or maybe not job, but like it was a hobby, I guess, but it was still a job because it was like a commitment mm-hmm. that I had to make on a regular basis, and it was a lot of hours, but at the same time, because of my team and the environment there, it was like building family, so it wasn't just a job, but it required a lot of time, and you know, I think that certain people can benefit more from a team doing well, particularly coaches. Like, they get bonuses if you make it to the NCAA or if you do well in the tournament. And some coaches will let their players see that by putting more money towards facilities or trips. And other coaches, it's just the benefit all goes to them.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to shout out your school name? You don't have to, but since you were number one in your sophomore year, you want to say who you played for?
Yeah, I played for North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
UNC.
Yes, sir.
Jocelyn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
A Tar Heel from New Rochelle.
Yes.
So before you go, Steve, and my guest is USA Sports reporter Steve Weberg, talking about college athletes and how they're used or not before the NCAA March Madness begins. Is there a collegiate Curt Flood out there? You know, Curt Flood, the baseball major leaguer who once upon a time sued over baseball's reserve clause. He lost in the Supreme Court, but team owners then allowed free agency when it looked like Congress might intervene, and that's how baseball players stopped being owned by their teams, in effect, and able to negotiate free agent contracts. Is there a Curt Flood out there for college sports who might take it out of the hands of the NCAA and move it into the realm of Congress or the courts?
If you're talking about an athlete who's currently in school and maybe currently on scholarship, it would probably be unlikely. You know, certainly that was the case with Curt Flood. He had a career to lose and did indeed lose it to pursue that fight. But we are seeing some ex-athletes kind of try to chip away at the edges. You know, Ed O'Bannon, the former UCLA basketball player, is kind of at the forefront of a group of former players. Oscar Robertson wound up adding his name to this suit, suing the NCAA over use of their likenesses after they're out of school in things such as video games and the like. And the fact that the NCAA, you know, everybody else is continuing to make money on their likenesses even though they are, you know, well out of school. Mm-hmm. And that case is still in the court system, may come to trial early next year. You've also got a kind of an athlete's rights organization of a former UCLA football player named Ramogi Huma out in Los Angeles is constantly, and they get some backing, they have actually have some union backing, and steelworkers perhaps, don't mm-hmm. quote me on that, but they have some union backing, and they're constantly hammering away on various athletes' rights issues, and the issue of compensation is one of them. So, again, in terms of somebody within the system, and that's what would have the most resonance, would be somebody who's currently in school going after the NCAA.
You don't see it right away.
That seems tough, yeah.
USA Today sports reporter Steve Weberg, have you done your brackets yet?
You know what? I'm better at putting the back brackets together on the front end than predicting how they're going to play out on the back end. But, yeah, I have taken a look at it. I'm headed to Omaha, as a matter of fact, tomorrow. I'll be with Missouri and Kansas on the front end.
We'll be looking for you in USA Today. Sports reporter Steve Weberg, thanks for coming on with us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Now it's time for a call in for our remaining minutes today on the question, what's in your storage unit? and why do you pay that second rent? Call us with any answer to that question. What's in your storage unit? Are you one of those people who pays that $29.99 for a few feet by a few feet outside your apartment or your house? 212-433-WNYC. We'll take your calls in a minute. What's in your storage unit? And why do you pay that second rent? 212-433-9692.